The fight would never have happened if Drizzto Erden had been given a reasonable choice. The desires of his ego, he understood and fully accepted, were no valid reason for mortal combat. Now, with Regis helpless behind him, and his friends somewhere above, facing dark elf enemies, the challenge had to be met. He felt the hard metal of his scimitar hilts in his hands, let his eyes slip back fully into the normal spectrum of light as Twinkle flared its angry blue. And Trary halted, sword at one side, dagger at the other, and motioned for Driz to approach. For the third time in less than a day, Twinkle slapped hard against the assassin's slender blade, the third time, and as far as both Drizzt and Entrary were concerned, the very last time. They started easily, each measuring his steps on the unorthodox arena. The ledge was perhaps 10 feet wide at this point, but narrowed considerably, just behind Drizzt and just behind Entrary. A backhand slash with the sword led in Trary's routine, dagger thrust following. Two solid parries sounded, and Drizzt snapped one scimitar for the opening between Entrary's blades, an opening that was closed by a retreating sword in the blink of an eye, with Drizzt's attack slapped harmlessly aside. They circled, Drizzt inside and near the wall, the assassin moving easily near the drop. Entrary slashed low, unexpectedly leading with the dagger this time. Drizzt hopped the shortened cut, came with a two-chop combination for the ducking assassin's head. And Trary's sword darted left and right, worked horizontally above his head to block ensuing blows, and shifted its angle slightly to poke ahead, to keep the drow at bay while the assassin came back to equal footing. "It will not be a quick kill," and Trary promised with an evil smile. As if to disprove his own claim, he leaped ahead furiously, sword leading. Drizzt's hands worked in a blur, his scimitars hitting the deftly angled weapon repeatedly. The dark elf worked to the side, kept his back from flattening against the wall. Drizzt agreed fully with the assassin's estimate. This would not be a quick kill, whoever might win. They would fight for many minutes, for an hour perhaps, and to what end, Drizzt wondered. What gain could he expect? Would Vierna and her cohort show up and bring the challenge to a premature conclusion? How vulnerable Drizzt and Regis would be then, with nowhere to run and a drop of several hundred feet just inches away. Again the assassin pressed the attack, and again Drizzt worked his scimitars through the proper, perfectly balanced defenses, and Trary getting nowhere near to hitting him. And Trary went into a spin then, imitating Drizzt's movements in their previous two encounters, working his two blades like the edge of a screw to force Drizzt back to a narrower position on the ledge. Drizzt was surprised that the assassin had learned the daring and difficult maneuver so completely after only two observations, but it was a move Drizzt had designed and he knew how to counter it. He too went into a spinning rotation, scimitars flowing up and down. Blades connected repeatedly with each turn, sometimes lighting sparks in the dark night, metal screeching, green and blue mixing in an indistinct blur. Drizzt moved right by Entrary. The assassin reversed his spin suddenly, but Drizzt saw the shift and came to a stop, both blades blocking the reversed cut of sword and dagger. Drizzt began once more, counter to Entrary, and this time, when Entrary again turned his rotation back the other way, the drow anticipated it so fully that he actually reversed direction first. For Regis, staring helplessly, not daring to intervene, and for any of the region's nocturnal creatures that might have been watching, there were no words to describe the amazing dance, the interweaving of colors as Twinkle and the assassin's glowing blade passed, the violet sparkle of Drizzt's eyes, the red heat of Entrary's. The scrape of blades became a symphony, a myriad of notes playing to their dance, evoking a strange sense of harmony between these most bitter enemies. They stopped in unison a few feet apart, both understanding that there would be no end to that spinning dance, no advantage by either player. They stood like matching bookends of identical weight. And Trary laughed aloud at the realization, laughed so that he might savor this moment, this many-act play that perhaps would see the dawn and perhaps would never be resolved. Drizzt found no humor, and his private eagerness at the beginning of the challenge had flown, leaving him with a weight of responsibility for Regis and for his friends back in the tunnels. The assassin came in low and hard, sword darting, climbing with each strike as Entreri gradually straightened his stance, taking a full measure of Drizzt's defenses from a variety of cunning angles. Entreri settled him into a parrying rhythm, then broke the melody with a vicious dagger cut. The assassin howled in glee, thinking for a moment that his blade had slipped through. Twinkle's hilt had intercepted it cleanly, had caught it and held it, barely an inch from Drizzt's side. The assassin grimaced and stubbornly tried to push on as he came to understand the truth. Drizzt's expression was colder still. The dagger did not move. A twist of the drow's wrist sent both blades flying wide, and Entreri was wise enough to push off and break the clench, to circle back and wait for the next opportunity to present itself. "I almost had you," he teased. He hid his frown well, as Drizzt in no way responded, not with words, not with body movements, not with the unyielding set of his ebony-skinned features. A scimitar snapped across, ringing loudly through the breeze as Entreri brought his blocking sword in its path. The sudden sound assaulted Drizzt, reminded him that Vierna might not be far away. He pictured his friends in dire trouble, captured or dead, felt a special twinge of remorse for Wulfgar that he could not explain. He locked stares with Entreri, reminded himself that this man had been the one to cause it all, that this enemy had tricked him into the tunnels, had separated him from his friends. And now Drizzt could not protect them. A scimitar snapped across, the other came slashing in the other way. Drizzt repeated the routine, then a third time, each movement, each ring of metal against metal, bringing his thoughts more in line with this task, lifting his emotional preparations, heightening his warrior senses. Each strike was perfectly aimed, and each parry intercepted the attacking blades perfectly, yet neither Drizzt nor Entreri, locked through their staring eyes into mental combat, watched their hands through the physical movements. Neither one blinked. Not when the breeze of Drizzt's high slice moved the hair atop the assassin's head. Not when Entreri's sword thrust came to a parried stop a hair's breadth from Drizzt's eye. Drizzt felt his momentum building, felt the give and take of the battle coming quicker, strike and parry. Entreri, as consumed as the ranger, paced him. The movements of their bodies began to catch the blur of hands and weapons. Entreri dipped a shoulder, sword lashing out straight ahead. Drizzt spun a complete circle, parrying behind his back as he flitted out of reach. Images of Brunner and Catti Bree captured by Vierna tormented the ranger. He pictured Wulfgar, wounded or dying, a drow sword at his throat. He imagined the barbarian atop a funeral pyre, a conjured image that, for some reason Drizzt could not understand, would not be easily dismissed. Drizzt accepted the images, gave the mental assault his full attention, let the fears for his friends fuel his passion. That had been the difference between him and the assassin, he told himself. Told that part of himself that argued for him to keep his mind clear and his movements precise and well considered. That was how Entreri played the game, always in control, never feeling anything beyond the enemy at hand. A slight growl escaped Drizzt's lips. His lavender eyes simmered in the starlight. In his mind, Catti Bree screamed out in pain. He came at Entreri in a wild rush. The assassin laughed at him, sword and dagger working furiously to keep the two scimitars at bay. "Give in to the rage," he chided. "Let go of your discipline." Entreri didn't understand. That was precisely the point. Twinkle chopped in, to be predictably parried by Entreri's sword. It wouldn't be that easy for the assassin this time, though. Drizzt retracted and struck again and again repeatedly, willingly slamming his blade against the assassin's already poised weapon. His other blade came in furiously from the other side, and Treri's dagger turned it aside. Drizzt's ensuing flurry, sheer madness it seemed, kept the assassin back on his heels. A dozen hits, two dozen, sounded like one long cry of ringing steel. And Treri's expression betrayed his laughter. He had not expected this wild and offensive routine, had not expected Drizzt to be so daring. If he could get one of his blades free for just an instant, the drow would be vulnerable. But Entreri could not free up sword or dagger. Fires drove Drizzt on, kept his pace impossibly fast, and his concentration perfect. To the nine hells with his own life, he decided, for his friends needed him to prevail. On and on the offensive routine continued. Regis covered his ears at the horrid wail and screech of the blades, but the halfling could not, for all his terror, take his gaze from the fighting masters. How many times Regis expected one or both to pitch over the cliff? How many times he thought a sword or scimitar thrust had struck home? But they somehow kept on fighting, each attack just missing, each defense in line at the last possible instant. Twinkle hit the sword. Drizzt's following strike from the other side was not parried, but went in short as Entreri shifted his foot and fell back a step. The assassin's dagger arm shot forward. Entreri released a primal scream of victory, thinking Drizzt had slipped up. Twinkle came across from its high perch faster than Entreri expected, faster than the assassin believed possible, gashing his forearm an instant before he got the dagger to Drizzt's exposed belly. Back flew the scimitar, backhanding the sword away, and Treri leaped ahead to get in close, realizing his vulnerability. His sudden charge saved his life, but while Drizzt could not angle the tip of his free blade for a killing thrust, he could and did punch out with a hilt, connecting solidly with Entreri's face, sending the man staggering backward. On came the dark elf, blades flashing relentlessly, driving Entreri back to within an inch of the cliff. The assassin tried to go to his right, but one scimitar knocked aside his blocking sword while the other's maneuvering kept Drizzt directly in front of him. The assassin started left, but with his wounded dagger arm slow to react, he knew he could not get beyond the drow's reach in time. Entreri held his ground, parrying furiously, trying to find a countering routine that would drive this possessed enemy back. Drizzt's breath came in short puffs as he found a rhythm to his frantic pace. His eyes flared, unrelenting, as he reminded himself over and over that his friends were dying and that he could not protect them. He fell too far into the rage, hardly registered the movement as the dagger flew at him. At the very last instant, he ducked aside, the skin above his cheekbones slashed in a 3-inch-long cut. More importantly, Drizzt's forward rhythm was shattered. His arms ached from the exertion. His momentum had played itself out. On came the snarling assassin, sword poking, even scoring a slight hit as he drove Drizzt back and around. By the time the ranger had regained his balance somewhat, his toes, not Entreri's, were squarely facing the mountain wall, his heels feeling the free-flowing emptiness of the mountain winds. "I am the better," Entreri proclaimed, and his ensuing attack almost proved his claim. Sword slashing and darting, he drove Drizzt's heel over the edge. Drizzt dropped to one knee to keep his weight forward. He felt the wind keenly, heard Regis scream his name. Entreri could have leaped back and retrieved his dagger, but he sensed the kill, sensed he would never again have a better opportunity to end the game. His sword banged down with fury. Drizzt seemed to buckle under its weight, seemed to slip even farther over the cliff edge. Drizzt reached to his inner self, to the innate magic of his heritage, and produced darkness. Drizzt dove to the side in a roll, came up several feet along the ledge, behind the darkness globe he had created near Regis. Incredibly, Entreri was still in front of him, pressing him wickedly. "I know your tricks, drow," the skilled assassin declared. A part of Drizzt O'Urden wanted to give in then, to simply lie back and let the mountains take him. But it was a fleeting moment of weakness, one from which Drizzt recoiled, one that fueled his indomitable spirit and lent strength to his weary arms. But so too was hungry Entreri fueled. Drizzt slipped suddenly and had to grab for the ledge, releasing his grip on his blade. Twinkle toppled over the cliff, skipping down along the stones. Entreri's sword slammed down, blocked by only the remaining scimitar. The assassin howled and jumped back, coming right back with a thrust. Drizzt could not stop it, Entreri knew, his eyes going wide as the moment of victory finally presented itself. The twisted drow's angle was all wrong. Drizzt couldn't possibly get his remaining blade down and turned in line in time. He couldn't stop it. Drizzt didn't try to stop it. He had quietly coiled one leg under him for a roll, and he went to the side and ahead as the sword dived in, narrowly missing. Drizzt spun his prone body about, one foot kicking against the front of Entreri's ankle, the other hooking and slamming the assassin behind the knee. Only then did Entreri realize that the drow's slip and the lost scimitar had been a ruse. Only then did Artemis Entreri realize that his own hunger for the kill had defeated him. His momentum forward with the eager thrust, he pitched toward the ledge. Every muscle in his body snapped taut. He drove his slender sword through Drizzt's foot and somehow managed to catch a hold on the drow's impaled boot with his free hand. The momentum was too great for Drizzt, still sidelong on the smooth ledge, to hold them both back. The drow was pulled out straight as he went over, right above Entreri, skidding down the stone, the agony in his foot fading as more pains, bruises and cuts from the jagged ride became evident. Drizzt held tightly to his second scimitar, jammed its hilt into a nook, and found a grasp with his other hand. He shuddered to a stop, and Entreri stretched out below him, over an inverted section that offered the assassin no chance of a handhold. Drizzt thought his entire insides would be ripped out through his impaled foot. He glanced down to see one of Entreri's hands waving wildly, the other clutched desperately to the sword hilt, a macabre and tentative lifeline. Drizzt groaned and grimaced, nearly fainted from the pain, as the blade slipped out several inches. "No," he heard Entreri deny, and the assassin went very still, apparently understanding the precariousness of his position. Drizzt looked down at him, hanging in midair, still well over 200 feet from the ground. "This is not the way to claim victory," Entreri called to him in a desperate burst. "This defeats the purpose of the challenge and dishonors you." Drizzt reminded himself of Catti Bree, got the strange sensation once more that Wulfgar was lost to him. "You did not win," Entreri cried. Drizzt let the fires in his lavender eyes speak for him. He set his hands and squared his jaw and turned his foot, feeling every deliciously agonizing inch as the long sword slipped through. Entreri scrambled and kicked, almost got a hold on Drizzt with his free hand as the blade came free. The assassin tumbled away into the blackness of night, his cry swallowed by the mourn of the mountain wind.
Chapter 21 Mountain Valley Winds. Drizzt slowly doubled over and managed to get a hand to his ripped boot, where he somehow stemmed the blood flow. The wound was clean, at least, and after a few tries, Drizzt found that he still had use of the foot, that it would still support his weight, though painfully. "Regis?" he called up the cliff face. The dark shape of the halfling's head peered out over the ledge.
"Drizzt?"
Regis called back tentatively.
I thought..."
"I am all right," the drow assured him. "Entreri is gone." Drizzt couldn't make out Regis's cherubic features from that distance, but he could well imagine the joy the news brought his tormented friend. Entreri had chased Regis for many years, had caught him twice, and neither time had been a pleasant experience for the halfling. Regis feared Artemis Entreri more than anything else in the world, and now, it seemed, the halfling could put that fear to rest.
"I see Twinkle,"
the halfling called excitedly, the silhouette of his arm coming over the lip in a downward point.
"It's glowing down at the bottom, to your right."
Drizzt peered that way, but he could not see the bottom of the cliff, since the stone sloped out directly beneath him. He inched his way to the side, and as Regis had claimed, the magical scimitar came into sight, its blue glow stark against the dark stone of the valley floor. Drizzt cautiously considered this revelation for a few moments. Why would the scimitar, out of his grasp, flare so? Always he had considered the blade's fire a reflection of himself, a magically empathetic reaction to the fires within him. He winced at the notion that perhaps Artemis Entreri had retrieved the blade. Drizzt pictured the assassin grinning up at him, holding Twinkle out as ironic bait. Drizzt dismissed the dark notion immediately. He had seen Entreri fall down across the face of an inverted slope with nothing to grab onto, the wall moving farther away from him as he plummeted. The best the assassin could have hoped for was a bouncing skid after a 30 or 40 foot freefall. Even if he was not dead, he certainly was not standing on the valley floor. What, then, was Drizzt to do? He thought he should go back immediately to Regis and hunt on to find out the fate of his friends. He could get back to the valley easily enough from Keeper's Dale when the trouble had passed, and with any luck, no goblin or mountain troll would have scooped up the blade. When he considered the possibility of battling Vierna's charges once more, though, Drizzt realized he would feel better with Twinkle in hand. He looked down again, and the scimitar called out to him. He felt its call in his mind and could not be sure if he had imagined it, or if Twinkle possessed some abilities that Drizzt did not yet understand. Something else called to Drizzt, too, he had to admit to himself, if not to anyone else. His curiosity over Entreri's fate would not be easily sated. Drizzt would rest easier if he found the assassin's broken form at the base of the mountain wall. "I am going for the blade," the drow yelled up to Regis. "I'll not be gone long. Cry out for any trouble." He heard a slight whimper from above, but Regis only called, "Hurry!" and did not argue the decision. Drizzt sheathed his remaining scimitar and picked his way carefully around the inverted region, catching firm handholds and trying as best he could to keep the pressure from his wounded foot. After 50 feet or so, he came to a steeply pitched but not sheer region of loose stone. There were no handholds here, but Drizzt did not need any. He lay flat against the wall and slid slowly down. He saw the danger from the corner of his eye, bat-winged and man-sized, and cutting sharp angles in its flight along the mountain valley winds. Drizzt braced himself as it veered in, saw the greenish-blue glow of a familiar sword. Entreri! The assassin cackled with taunting glee as he soared past, scoring a slight hit on the drow's shoulder. Entreri's cloak had transformed, had sprouted to form bat wings. Drizzt now understood the true reason the devious assassin had chosen to fight on the ledge. The assassin made a second pass, closer, smacking the drow with the side of his sword and kicking out with his boot into Drizzt's back. Drizzt rolled with the hits, then began to slide dangerously, the loose rubble shifting under him. He drew his scimitar and somehow parried the next passing strike. "Have you a cloak like mine?" Entreri teased, cutting a sharp turn some distance away and seeming to hover in midair. Poor little drow, with no net to catch him. Another gleeful cackle sounded, and in swooped the assassin, still keeping a respectable distance, knowing he held every advantage and could not let his eagerness betray him. The sword, carrying the momentum of the assassin's swift flight, slammed hard against Drizzt's scimitar, and while the ranger managed to keep the slender blade clear of his body, the assassin clearly had won the pass. Drizzt was sliding once more. He turned back to face the stone, clutched at it, put one arm under him, and hooked his fingers, using his weight to dig them deeply enough into the loose gravel to slow the descent. Drizzt seemed helpless at that awful moment, as concerned with holding his precarious perch as in parrying the assassin's strikes. A few more passes likely would send him to his death. "You cannot begin to know my many tricks," the assassin cried in victory, swooping back toward his prey. Drizzt rolled over to face Entreri as the killer dove in, the drow ranger's free hand coming up and out straight, holding something Entreri did not expect. "As you cannot know mine," Drizzt retorted. He sorted through the assassin's suddenly evasive spins and fired the hand crossbow, the weapon he had taken from the drow he had felled at the base of the chute. Entreri slapped a hand against the side of his neck, tore the quarrel free just an instant after it had stung him.
No, he wailed, feeling the poison burn. Damn you, Drizzt O'Erden! He swooped for the wall, knowing that flying while sleeping would be less than wise, but the insidious poison, already coursing through a major artery, blurred his vision. He bounced off the wall 20 feet to Drizzt's right, the light of his sword dying immediately as it fell from his grasp. Drizzt heard the groan, heard another curse, this one interrupted by a profound yawn. Still the cloak's bat wings beat, holding the assassin aloft. He could not focus his weary mind to guide his way, though, and he flitted and darted on the mountain winds, hitting the wall again and then a third time. Drizzt heard the crack of bone, and Treri's left arm fell limp beneath his horizontal form. His legs, too, drooped, his strength stolen by the poison. Damn you, he said again, groggily, obviously slipping in and out of consciousness. The cloak caught an air current then, apparently, for Entreri soared off down the valley and was swallowed by the darkness, silently, like death. Drizzt's descent from that point was not too difficult or dangerous for the agile drow. The hike became a reprieve, a few moments in which he could allow his defenses to slip away, and he could reflect on the enormity of what had just occurred. His fight with Entreri had not spanned so many months, particularly by a drow elf's reckoning, but it had been as brutal and vital as anything Drizzt had ever known. The assassin had been his antithesis, the dark mirror image of Drizzt's soul, the greatest fears Drizzt had ever held for his own future. Now it was over. Drizzt had shattered the mirror. Had he really proven anything, he wondered? Perhaps not. But at the very least, Drizzt had rid the world of a dangerous and evil man. He found Twinkle easily, the scimitar flaring brightly when he picked it up. Then its inner light died away to show the reflections of starlight on its silvery blade. Drizzt approved of the image and reverently slid the scimitar back into its sheath. He considered searching for Entreri's lost sword, then reminded himself that he had not the time to spare, that Regis and probably his other friends needed him. He was back beside the halfling in a few minutes, hoisting Regis to his side and heading back for the tunnel entrance.
Entreri?
The halfling asked tentatively, as though he could not bring himself to believe that the assassin was finally gone. Lost on the mountain winds, Drizzt replied confidently, but with no hint of superiority in his even-toned voice. Lost on the winds. Drizzt could not know how accurate his cryptic answer had been. Drugged and fast fading from consciousness, Artemis Entreri meandered along the rising currents of the wide valley. His mind could not focus, could not issue telepathic commands to the animated cloak, and without his guidance the magical wings kept beating. He felt the rush of air increase with his speed. He hurtled along, barely aware that he was in flight. Entreri shook his head violently, trying to be rid of the sleeping poison's nagging grasp. He knew, somewhere in the back of his mind, that he had to wake up fully, had to regain control and slow himself. But the rushing air felt good as it washed over his cheeks. The sound of the wind in his ears gave him a sensation of freedom, of breaking free of mortal bonds. His eyes blinked open and saw only starless, ominous blackness. He could not realize that it was the end of the valley, a mountain wall. The rush of air beckoned him to fall into his dreams. He hit the wall head-on. Fiery explosions erupted in his head and body. The air gushed from his lungs in one great burst. He was not aware that the impact had torn his magical cloak, had broken its winged enchantment, was not aware that the wind in his ears was now the sound of falling, or that he was 200 feet off the ground. Chapter 22. Charge of the Heavy Brigade. 12 armored dwarves led the procession, their interlocking shields presenting a solid wall of metal to enemy weapons.
The shields were specially hinged, allowing the dwarves on the outside edges to turn back behind the front rank whenever the corridor tightened. General Dagna and his elite cavalry-like force came in the following ranks, riding, not marching, each warrior armed with a readied heavy crossbow fitted with special darts tipped in a silver-white metal. Several torchbearers, each holding two of the flaming brands out far for easy access to the riders, wandered between the tusked mounts of Dagna's 20 troops. The remainder of the dwarven army came behind, wearing grim expressions different from those looks they had worn when they had come down this way to battle the goblins. Dwarves did not laugh about the presence of dark elves, and by all their reckoning, their king was in dire trouble. They came to the side passage, clear once more since the darkness spells had long since expired. The Etin Bone sat facing them across the way, somehow undisturbed through all the tumult of the previous encounter.
"Clerics," Dagna whispered, a quiet call that was repeated down the dwarven lines.
Somewhere in the closest ranks behind Dagna's elites, half a dozen dwarven priests, wearing their smithy apron vestments and holding mithril warhammer holy symbols tight in upraised fists, sighted their targets, two to the side, two in front, and two above.
"Well," Dagna said to the shield-bearing dwarves in the front rank, "give him something worth shooting at."
The blocking wall of shields broke apart, 12 dwarves stringing out along the wide intersection. Nothing happened.
"Damn,"
Dagna pouted after a few uneventful moments, realizing that the dark elves had moved back to another ambush spot. In a minute, the battle formation was rejoined and the force tromped off at a greater pace, with just a small group slipping down the side passage to make sure their enemies would not come out at their backs. Grumbling whispers ran the length of the ranks, eager dwarves frustrated by the delay. Some time later, the growl of one of the war dogs, leashed and held in the middle ranks of the army, came as the only warning. Crossbows clicked from up ahead, most of the quarrels banging harmlessly off the interlocked shields, but some, coming from higher angles, soaring down to strike the dwarves in the second and third ranks. One torchbearer went down, his flaming brands causing minor havoc with the mounts of the nearest two riders. But the dwarves and their mounts were well trained, and the situation did not deteriorate into chaos. Clerics went into their chants, reciting the proper magical syllables. Dagna and his riders put the tips of their crossbows against the flaming torches. The front row counted in unison to 10, then fell straight to their backs, shields defensively atop them. On came the cavalry, armored war pigs grunting, magnesium-tipped quarrels flaring to intense white light. The cavalry charge took the dwarves beyond the area of torchlight quickly, but the clerical spells popped into the corridor ahead of them, magical light stealing the darkness. Dagna and every other member of his eager band whooped with delight, seeing the dark elves scrambling this time, apparently caught by surprise with the sudden ferocity and speed of the dwarven attack. The drow had been confident that they could outrun the short-legged dwarves, and so they could, but they couldn't outrun the sturdy, tusked mounts. Dagna saw one dark elf turn and reach out, as if to throw, and instinctively, the worldly and wise general understood the creature to be using his darkness ability, trying to counter the stinging magical lights. When the magnesium quarrel lit up inside of the drow's belly, his focus predictably shifted.
"Sandstone!"
cried the rider right beside Dagna, a dwarven curse if ever there was one. The general saw his companion lurch backward, angling his weapon above. He jerked, obviously hit by some missile, but managed to fire his own crossbow before he tumbled from his saddle, bouncing along the stone. The flaring quarrel missed, but it doomed the drow floating among the rafters anyway, serving as a tracer for the many dwarven foot soldiers rushing in behind.
"Ceiling!"
cried one dwarf, and 24 crossbowmen skidded to their knees, eyes going up. They caught a shifting motion among the few stalactites and fired, practically in unison. More dwarves rushed by them as they reloaded, war dogs sounding anxious cries. Dagna's band charged on in hot pursuit, caring little that they had passed beyond the lighted area. The tunnels were fairly flat, and the fleeing drow were not far ahead.
One cleric stopped to aid the kneeling crossbowman. They showed him the general direction of their quarry, and he put a light spell up there. The dead drow, his torso ripped by a score of heavy bolts, hung motionless in the air. As if on cue to the revealing light, his levitation spell gave out, and he plummeted the 20 feet to the floor. The dwarves were not even watching him. The light in the ceiling had revealed two of the drow's hidden companions. These new dark elves worked fast to counter the spell with their innate powers of darkness, but it did them little good, for the skilled crossbowman had picked them out and no longer needed to see them. Groans and a scream of agony accompanied a frantic explosion of clicking sounds as the host of quarrels skipped and ricocheted off the many stalactites. The two drow dropped, one writhing about as he hit the floor, not quite dead. The fierce dwarves fell over him, bludgeoning him with the butts of their heavy weapons. The one tunnel became several as the riders, in hot pursuit, came into a region of snaking side passages. Dagna picked out his target easily enough, despite the growing maze and the gloom. Actually, the dimness aided Dagna, for the drow he was chasing had been hit in the shoulder, the white flaring magnesium serving as a beacon for the charging dwarf. He gained with every stride, saw the drow turn to face him, the dark elf's shoulder glowing red when viewed from the front. Dagna dropped his crossbow aside and whipped out a heavy mace, angling the boar as if to make a close pass by the drow's wounded flank. The drow, taking the bait, turned sidelong, getting his one working weapon hand in line. At the last moment, Dagna lowered his head and veered the tusked boar, and the drow's eyes widened when he realized the wild dwarf's new course. He tried to leap aside, but got hit solidly, tusks catching him just above the knee, Dagna's iron helmet slamming his belly. He hurtled through the air for perhaps 15 feet, and would have gone farther if the tunnel wall hadn't abruptly stopped him. Crumpled in a broken heap at the base of the wall, the barely conscious drow saw Dagna pull his mount up before him and saw Dagna's mace go up. The explosion in his head flared as brightly as the magnesium in his shoulder. Then there was only darkness. Bloodhounds led a large contingent of the dwarven army down to the left of the main chamber, into a region of looping, more natural caverns. Soldiers rumbled straight in, clerics among their ranks, while other dwarves, armed not with weapons but with tools, went to work behind them and among the passages to the sides. They came to the four-way intersection, the bloodhounds straining against their leads both left and right. The sneaky dwarves forced the dogs straight ahead, though, and predictably, more than a dozen dark elves slipped into the central corridor behind them, firing their nasty bolts. The army swung about, the clerics called upon their spells to light up the area, and the drow, outnumbered 4-1, wisely turned and fled. They had no reason to fear their way back blocked, not with so many tunnels before them. They had a good idea of the dwarven numbers, and were certain that fewer than half of their options would be blocked. Down the very first path they chose, they came to understand their error, though, running up against a freshly constructed iron door barred from the other side. The dark elves could see around the edges of the portal. The dwarves hadn't had the time to fit it perfectly into the oddly shaped tunnel, but there was no way to slip through. The next tunnel seemed more promising, and by the hopes of the fleeing drow it had to be, for the dwarven force, dogs barking wildly, was right on their heels again. Turning a corner, the dark elves found a second door, heard the hammers of the working dwarves behind it, putting in the finishing touches. The desperate dark elves dropped spells of darkness on the other side of the door, slowing the work. They found the widest cracks along the jamb and fired their crossbows blindly at the workers, adding to the confusion. One drow got his hand around and located the locking bar. Too late. The dogs rounded the corner and the dwarven force fell over them. Darkness descended over the area of battle. A dwarven cleric, his powers nearly exhausted, countered it, but then another drow blackened the area once more. The brave dwarves fought blindly, matching drow's skill with sheer fury. One dwarf felt the hot burn as an unseen enemy's sword slipped between his ribs, slashing through his lung. The dwarf knew the wound would prove mortal, felt the blood filling his lungs and choking off his breathing. He could have retreated, hoped to fall out of the darkened area close enough to a cleric with curative spells to treat the wound. In that critical instant, though, the dwarf knew his opponent was vulnerable, knew that if he retreated, one of his comrades might next feel the dark elf's cruel sword. He lunged ahead, the drow's sword impaling him further, and chopped with his warhammer, connecting once, then again on his enemy. He went down atop the dead drow and died with a grim smile of satisfaction splayed across his bearded face. Two dwarves, driving in deeply side by side, felt their intended target dive between them, but turned too late to avoid a collision on the iron door. Disoriented but sensing movement to the side, each of them launched mighty swings with his hammer, each connecting on the other. Down they went in a heap, and they felt the rush of air as the dark elf came back over them, this time at the end of a dwarven spear, to be slammed hard against the door. The drow fell wounded atop the two dwarves, and they had enough wits and strength remaining to grab on to the gift. They kicked and bit, punched out with their weapon hilts or with their gauntleted hands. In mere seconds, they ripped the unfortunate dark elf apart. More than a score of dwarves died at the end of drow weapons in that narrow corridor, but so too did 15 dark elves, half of the force that had stood to block the way into the new sections. A handful of drow kept ahead of their pig-riding pursuers long enough to make their way into the back chambers, into the very room where Drizdyn and Treri had fought for the enjoyment of Vierna and her minions. The blasted door and several dead companions told the soldiers that Vierna's group had been hit hard, but they nevertheless believed their salvation at hand when the first of them leaped for the chute, leaped, and got stuck on the webbing barring the way. The stuck drow flailed helplessly, both his arms fully trapped. His companions, with no thoughts of aiding their doomed friend, looked to the room's other door for their salvation. War pigs grunted. A dozen dwarven riders whooped in joy as they kicked their mounts across the blasted wooden door. General Dagna came into the room barely 5 minutes later to see 5 dark elves, 2 dwarves, and 3 pigs lying dead on the floor. Satisfied that no other enemies were about, the general ordered an inspection of the remarkable area. Grief stung their hearts when they found Cobble's crushed form under the conjured wall of iron, but it was mixed with some measure of hope, for Brunner and the others obviously had hit the enemy hard in this place, and apparently, with the exception of poor Cobble, had survived.
"Where are ye, Brunner?"
the general asked down the empty corridors.
"Where are ye?"
Sheer determination, pure denial of defeat, was their only strength as Catti Bree and Brunner, weary and wounded and leaning on each other for support, made their way through the winding tunnels, deeper into the natural corridors. Brunner held the torch in his free hand. Catti Bree kept her bow ready. Neither of them believed they would stand a chance if they again encountered the dark elves, but in their hearts, neither of them believed that they could possibly lose.
"Where's that damned cat?" Brunner asked. "And the wild one?"
Catti Bree shook her head, having no definite answers. Who knew where Puent might have gotten to? He had flown from the chamber in typical blind rage and could have run all the way back to Garam's Gorge by this time. Guinevere was a different story, though. Catti Bree dropped her hand into her pouch, sensitive fingers tracing the intricate work of the figurine. She sensed that the panther was no longer about and trusted the feeling. For if Guinevere had not left the material plane, the panther would have made contact with them by this time. Catti Bree stopped, and Brunner, after a few steps, turned back curiously and did likewise. The young woman, on one knee, held the figurine in both hands, studying it intently, her bow on the floor by her side.
"Gone?" Brunner asked.
Catti Bree shrugged and placed the statue on the floor, then called softly to Guinevere. For a long moment, nothing happened. But just as Catti Bree was about to retrieve the item, the familiar gray mist began to gather and take shape. Guinevere looked haggard indeed. The panther's muscles drooped, slack from exhaustion, and the black-furred skin of one shoulder hung out, torn, revealing sinew and cord-like tendons underneath.
"Oh, go back!"
Catti Bree cried, horrified by the sight. She scooped up the figurine and moved to dismiss the panther.
Guinevar moved faster than either Catibri or the dwarf would have believed possible, given the cat's desperate state. A paw slashed up at Catibri, batting the figurine to the ground. The panther flattened its ears and issued an angry growl.
"Let the cat stay," Brunner said.
Catibri gave the dwarf an incredulous look.
"Ain't no worse than the rest of us," Brunner explained.
He walked over and dropped a gentle hand on the panther's head, easing the tension. Guinevar's ears came back up, and the cat stopped growling.
"And no less determined."
Brunner looked back to Catibri, then to the corridor beyond.
"The three of us, then," the dwarf said, "beat up and ready to fall down. But not afore we take them stinking drow down under us."
Drizzt could sense that he was getting close, and he drew his second blade, Twinkle, concentrating hard to keep the scimitar's blue light from flaring. To his delight, the scimitar responded perfectly. Drizzt was hardly aware of the halfling he still held at his side. His keen senses were instead trained in all directions for some clue that the enemy was about. He came through a low doorway into an unremarkable chamber, barely a wider section of hallway, with two other exits, one to the side and level, the other straight ahead, ascending once more. Drizzt suddenly pushed Regis to the ground, fell back against the wall, weapons and eyes trained to the side. It was no drow that came through the side entrance, though, but a dwarf, possibly the most odd-looking creature either of the companions had ever seen. Puent was barely three running strides from the dark elf, and his hearty roar showed that he felt confident he had gained the advantage of surprise. He dipped his head, put his spiked helm in line with Drizzt's belly, and heard the little one lying to the side squeak out in alarm. Drizzt snapped his hands up above his head, feeling grooves in the wall with strong, sensitive fingers. He still held both his blades, and there wasn't much to grab, but the agile drow didn't need much. As the confident battle rager barreled in blindly, Drizzt lifted his legs up, out, and over the spike. Puent hit the wall head-on, his spike digging a 3-inch-deep gouge in the stone. Drizzt's legs came down, one on either side of the bent battle rager's head, and down too came the drow's scimitars, hilts pounding hard against the back of Puent's exposed neck. The dwarf's spike bent queerly to one side, squealed and scraped as he dropped flat to the stone, groaning loudly. Drizzt leaped away, allowed the eager scimitar to flare up, bathing the area in a blue glow.
"Dwarf?"
Regis commented, surprised. Puent groaned and rolled over. Drizzt spotted an amulet, carved with the foaming mug standard of Clan Battlehammer, on a chain about his neck. Puent shook his head and leaped suddenly to his feet.
"Ye won that one!"
he roared, and he started for Drizzt.
"We are not enemies," the drow ranger tried to explain.
Regis cried out again as Puent came in close, launching a 1-2 punching combination with his glove nails. Drizzt easily avoided the short punches and took note of the many sharp ridges on his opponent's armor. Puent lashed out again, stepping in behind the blow to give it some range. It was a ruse, Drizzt knew, with no chance of hitting. Already the veteran drow understood Puent's battle tactics, and he knew the phony punch was designed only to put this fearsome dwarf in line, that he might hurl himself at Drizzt. A scimitar flashed out to intercept the punch. Drizzt surprised the dwarf by twirling his second blade above his head and stepping in closer, exactly the opposite course Puent had expected him to travel. Then launching his high-riding weapon out in a wide, arcing, and smoothly descending course as he stepped to the side, bringing the blade to bear at the back of the dwarf's knee. Puent momentarily forgot about his impending leap and instinctively bent the vulnerable leg away from the attack. Drizzt pressed on, putting just enough pressure on the dwarf's knee to keep it moving along. Puent pitched into the air, landed hard on the floor, flat on his back.
"Stop it!"
Regis yelled at the stubborn fallen dwarf, who was again trying to get up.
"Stop it! We are not your enemies!"
"He speaks the truth," Drizzt added.
"Puent, up on one knee, paused and looked curiously from Regis to Drizzt.
"We came in here to get the halfling," he said to Drizzt, obviously confused. "To get him and skin him alive. And now you're telling me to trust him?"
"Different halfling," Drizzt remarked, snapping his blades into their sheaths. An inadvertent grin showed on the dwarf's face as he considered the advantage his enemy apparently had just given him. "We are not your enemy," Drizzt said evenly, lavender eyes flashing dangerously. "But I've no more time to play your foolish games." Twent leaned forward, muscles twitching, eager to leap ahead and rip the drow apart. Again the drow's eyes flashed, and Twent relaxed, understanding that this opponent had just read his thoughts. "Come ahead if you will," Drizzt warned. "But know that the next time you go down, you will never get back up." Thibbledorf Puent, rarely shaken, considered the grim promise and his opponent's easy stance, and he remembered what Catibree had told him about this drow, if indeed this was the legendary Drizzt O'Erden.
"Guess we're friends,"
the unnerved dwarf admitted, and he slowly rose. Chapter 23 The Warrior Incarnate. With Puent backtracking and leading the way, Drizzt was sure he would soon learn the fate of his friends and would face his evil sister once more. The battle rager couldn't tell him much about Brunner and the others, only that when he had been separated from them, they were being hard-pressed. The news drove Drizzt on more quickly. Images of Catibree, a helpless prisoner being tortured by Vierna, flitted on the edges of his consciousness. He pictured stubborn Brunner spitting in Vierna's face, and Vierna tearing the dwarf's face off in reply. Few chambers dotted this region. Long, narrow tunnels dominated, some wholly natural, others worked in places where the goblins apparently had decided that support was needed. The three came into a fully bricked tunnel then, long and straight, angling slightly up and with several side passages running off it. Drizzt didn't see the forms of the dark elves ahead of him, down the long dark corridor, but when Twinkle flared suddenly he did not doubt the sword's warning. The fact was confirmed a moment later when a crossbow quarrel zipped from the darkness and stuck Regis in the arm. The halfling groaned. Drizzt pulled him back and dropped him safely behind the corner of a side passage they had just passed. By the time the drow had turned back to the main corridor, Puent was in full charge, singing wildly, taking hit after hit from poisoned darts, but walking through them without a concern. Drizzt rushed after him, saw Puent charge right past the dark hole of another side corridor, and knew instinctively that the dwarf likely had wandered into a trap. Drizzt lost all track of the battle rager a moment later, when a quarrel shot past the distant dwarf to hit Drizzt. He looked down to it, hanging painfully from his forearm, and felt the burning tingle as Puent's countering elixir battled the poison. Drizzt thought of slumping where he stood, of inviting his enemies to think that their poison had felled him again, an easy capture. He couldn't abandon Puent, though, and he was simply too angry to wait for this encounter any longer. The time had come to end the threat. He slipped up to the dark hole of the side tunnel, kept Twinkle back a bit so it would not fully give him away. A roar of outrage exploded from up ahead, followed by a steady stream of dwarven curses, which told Drizzt that Puent's intended victims had slipped away. Drizzt heard a slight shuffle to the side, knew that the battle rager had piqued the curiosity of whoever was in there. He took one deep breath, mentally counted to three, and leaped around the corner, Twinkle flaring viciously. The closest drow fell back, firing a second crossbow quarrel at Drizzt that nicked his skin through a shoulder crease in his fine armor. He could only hope that Puent's potion was strong enough to handle a second hit, and took some comfort in the fact that Puent had seemed to be hit repeatedly during his corridor charge. Drizzt pressed the crossbowman backward in a rush, the evil drow fumbling to draw his melee weapon. He would have had the drow quickly, except that a second drow joined him, this one armed with sword and dirk. Drizzt had come into a small, roughly circular chamber, a second exit off to his right, probably joining the main corridor somewhere farther along. Drizzt hardly registered the physical features of the room, though, hardly took note of the initial swings of battle, parrying aside his opponent's measured strikes. His eyes remained beyond them, to the back of the room, where stood Vierna and the mercenary Jarlaxle.
"You have caused me great pains, my lost brother," Vierna snarled at him. "But the reward will be worth the cost now that you have returned to me."
Listening to her every word, the distracted Drizzt nearly let a sword slip past his defenses. He slapped it away at the last moment and came on in a flourish, scimitars swirling in a descending, crisscrossing pattern. The dark elf soldiers worked well together, though, and they fended off the attack, countering one after the other and forcing Drizzt back on his heels.
"I do so love to watch you fight," Vierna continued, now smiling smugly. "But I cannot take the chance that you will be slain, not yet."
She began a series of chants then, and Drizzt knew her impending spell would be aimed his way, probably at his mind. He gritted his teeth and accelerated the course of his battle, conjuring images of a tortured Catty Bree, putting up a wall of sheer anger. Vierna released her spell with a glorious cry, and waves of energy rolled over Drizzt, assaulted him, and told him, mind and body, to stop in place, to simply hold still and be captured. Inside the drow ranger welled a part of him, a primal and savage alter ego that he had not known since his days in the wild Underdark. He was the hunter again, free of emotions, free of mental vulnerability. He shrugged away the spell. His scimitars banged hard against his enemy's blades, hard pressing his two opponents. Vierna's eyes went wide with surprise. Jarlaxle, at her side, gave an undeniable snicker. "Your lawf-given powers will not affect me," Drizzt proclaimed. "I deny the Spider Queen."
"You will be given to the Spider Queen,"
Vierna shouted back, and she seemed to gain the upper hand once more as another drow soldier entered the chamber from the tunnel to Drizzt's right.
"Kill him," the priestess commanded. "Let the sacrifice be here and now. I'll tolerate no more blasphemy from this outcast."
Drizzt was fighting magnificently, keeping both his enemies more on their heels than on their toes. If the third skilled soldier came in, however, it never got to that. There came a wild roar from the tunnel on the right, and Thibbledorf Puent, head bowed in one of his typically frantic charges, plowed through. He hit the surprised drow soldier on the side, his bent helmet spike slicing through the unfortunate elf's slender hip, tearing into his abdomen. Puent's powerful legs continued to drive through until he at last got tangled in the impaled drow's feet, and both combatants crashed to the floor right before a stunned Vierna. The drow thrashed in helpless desperation as Puent pounded him mercilessly. Drizzt knew he had to get to his peer's side quickly, understood the danger Puent faced with Vierna and the mercenary having opened shots at him. He brought Twinkle in a flashing downward cross, deflecting both his opponent's swords to the side, and he stepped right in behind the blade, coming with his second blade at his closest opponent, the one who had hit him with a crossbow bolt and who carried no second weapon. The arm of the other drow shot across, Dirk hitting the scimitar just enough to prevent a kill. Still, Drizzt had scored a painful hit on one opponent, slicing the drow's cheek wide. Out came Vierna's snake-headed whip, the priestess's face an image of pure rage as she beat at the prone battle rager's back. Living snakeheads darted about the battle rager's fine armor, finding gaps through which they could bite at his thick hide. Puent wriggled his helmet spike free, drove a glove nail through the dying dark elf's face, then turned his attention to his newest attacker and her wicked weapon. Snap! A snakehead got him on the shoulder. Two others nipped his neck. Puent threw his arm up as he turned, but got bitten twice on the hand, his limb immediately going numb. He felt his potent elixir fighting back, but he hesitated, near to swooning. Snap! Vierna hit him again, all five snakeheads finding a target on the dwarf's hand and face. Quint regarded her a moment longer, formed his lips as if to speak out a curse. Then he fell to the stone and flopped about like a grounded fish, his entire body nearly numb, his nerves and muscles unable to function in any coordinated way.
Vierna looked Drizzt's way, her eyes burning with open hatred. "Now all your pitiful friends are dead, my lost brother," she growled, something she sincerely believed true. She advanced a step, snake whip held high, but paused at the sheer and unbridled rage that suddenly contorted her brother's features. "All your pitiful friends are dead." The words burned in Drizzt's blood, turned his heart to stone. "All your pitiful friends are dead."
Catti Bree, Wulfgar, and Brunner, everything Drizzt D'Urden held dear, were lost to him, taken by a heritage that he had not been able to escape. He could hardly see his opponent's movements, though he knew his scimitars were intercepting every attack with perfection, moving in a precise blur that offered his enemies no openings.
"All your pitiful friends are dead."
He was the hunter again, surviving the wilds of the Underdark. He was beyond the hunter, the warrior incarnate, fighting on perfect instinct. A sword thrust in from the right, Drizzt's scimitar slapped down across it, diving its tip to the ground, faster than the agile evil drow could react. Drizzt turned his blade completely over the sword and heaved high, throwing the drow back a step. Across flashed the scimitar, severing the triceps muscles on the back of the swordsman's arm. The pained drow yelled but somehow held his weapon, though it did him no good as the scimitar came back across, squealing as it cut through the fine mesh armor, drawing a line of blood across the drow's chest. Drizzt flipped the blade over in his hand in the blink of an eye, and the scimitar flashed back the other way high. He flipped it again and sent it back a fourth time, and the only reason he missed the mark was that the head that had been his intended target was already flying free. All the while, the scimitar in Drizzt's other hand had parried the other opponent's attacks. Vierna gasped, as did the remaining soldier facing Drizzt, and Drizzt would have fallen over him just as easily. He saw Jarlaxle's arm pumping, though, from beyond the opening left by the fallen opponent. Drizzt's next dance was pure and furious desperation. His first scimitar rang out with a metallic impact. Twinkle came across and batted a second dagger aside. It was over in a mere second, five daggers knocked away by a dark elf that hadn't even consciously seen them coming. Jarlaxle fell back on his heels, then began to circle, laughing all the while, amazed and thrilled by the stunning display and the continuing battle. Drizzt's troubles were not ended, though, for Vierna, crying for Loth to be with her, leaped ahead to lend support to the soldier, and her snake-headed whip presented more problems by far than had the dead drow soldier's single sword. Regis huddled back into as small a ball as he could manage when he saw the dark shapes drifting silently past the opening of the side passage. The halfling relaxed when the group had passed, was daring enough to crawl nearer to the entrance and use his infravision to try to discern if these were more evil dark elves. Those red glowing eyes gave him away. A sixth soldier was moving behind the first group. Regis fell back with a squeak. He grabbed a rock in his plump little hand and held it out before him. A pitiful weapon indeed against the likes of a drow elf. The dark elf considered the halfling and the tunnel all about Regis carefully, then entered, coming in cautiously. A smile widened as he came to realize Regis's apparent helplessness. "Already wounded?" he asked in the common tongue. It took Regis a moment to sort through the heavy and unfamiliar accent. He lifted the rock threateningly as the drow edged in close, kneeling to Regis's level and holding a long and cruel sword in one hand, a dagger in the other. The drow laughed aloud. "You will strike me down with your pebble?" he taunted. And he moved his arms out wide, presenting Regis an easy opening for his chest. "Hit me then, little halfling. Amuse me before my dagger digs a fine line across your throat." Regis, trembling, moved the rock in a jerking motion, as though he meant to take the drow up on the offer. It was the halfling's other hand which shot forward, though, the hand holding Artemis Entreri's dropped dagger. The jewels in the deadly blade flared appreciatively, as though the weapon had a life and a hunger of its own, when it ripped past the fine mesh armor and sank deeply into the startled dark elf's soft skin. Regis blinked in amazement at how easily the dagger had penetrated. It seemed as though his opponent wore thin parchment instead of metallic chainmail. The halfling's hand was nearly thrown from the weapon hilt as a surge of power coursed through the dagger into his arm. The drow tried to respond, and Regis would have had no defense if he had brought either weapon to bear. But the drow did not, for some reason could not. His eyes remained wide in shock, his body jerked spasmodically, and it seemed to Regis as if his very life force was being stolen away. His own mouth agape, Regis stared into the most profound expression of horror he had ever seen. More vital energy surged up the halfling's arm. He heard the drow's weapons fall to the stone. Regis could think only of old tales his papa had told him of frightening night creatures. He felt as he imagined a vampire must feel when feeding on the blood of its victims, felt a perverse warmth wash over him. His wounds were on the mend. The drow victim slumped lifelessly to the stone. Regis sat staring blankly at the magical dagger. He shuddered many times, recalling vividly each occasion when he had nearly felt that weapon's wicked sting. The two drow moved silently but swiftly through the winding tunnels that would bring them to Vierna and Jarlaxle. They were confident they had outdistanced the outrageous dwarf, did not know that Puent had sidetracked and had gotten to Vierna first. Nor did they know that another dwarf had entered the tunnels, a red-bearded dwarf whose teary eyes promised death to any enemy he stumbled upon. The dark elves turned a bend into the tunnel that would get them to the side room, parallel to the main tunnel. They saw the short but wide form of the dwarf swing about, just a few strides ahead of them, and charge in fearlessly, wildly. The three opponents intertwined in a confused jumble, Brunner shield-rushing with abandon, whipping his many-notched axe about him blindly.
"Ye killed me, boy!"
the dwarf bellowed, and though neither of his opponents could understand the common tongue, they could discern Brunner's rage clearly enough. One of the drow regained his footing and slipped his sword over the emblazoned shield, scoring a hit on the dwarf's shoulder that should have stolen the strength from that arm. If Brunner even knew he had been hit, he did not show it.
"Me boy!"
he growled, slapping aside the other drow's sword with a powerful swipe of his heavy axe. The drow replaced the sword with his second sword, again pressing the dwarf. But Brunner accepted the hit, didn't even flinch, his thoughts purely aimed for the kill. He chopped his axe in a low swoop. The drow hopped the blade, but Brunner stopped the swing and turned it about. The drow tried to hop a second time as soon as he landed, but Brunner's movements were too quick, the dwarf jerking the axe around the drow's ankle and heaving with all his strength, taking the drow from his feet. The other dark elf came over the dwarf, trying to shield his downed companion. His sword slashed across, scarring Brunner's face, blinding the dwarf in one eye. Again Brunner ignored the searing agony, pulled ahead within striking distance.
"Me boy!" he cried again, and he chopped down with all his strength, his axe blade cracking through the scrambling drow's spine.
Brunner threw his shield up just in time to stop a sword thrust from the standing drow. Off balance and shuffling backward, the dwarf tugged repeatedly, finally tearing the weapon free. Snakehead seemed to work independently of each other, assaulting Drizzt from different angles, snapping and coiling to snap again. Spurred on by the sight of Vierna fighting beside him, the male drow pressed Drizzt as well, sword and dirk working furiously that he might score the kill for the priestess for the glory of the wicked Spider Queen. Drizzt kept his composure throughout the assault, worked his scimitars and his feet in harmony to block or dodge, and to keep his opponents, particularly Vierna, back from him. He knew he was in trouble, though, especially when he noticed Jarlaxle, the